Number one, he's the founder of Secret Knot.
But remember, I'm dyslexic, can't spell, can't read, and can't write. So if you pay me Words with Friends, you win every time. Work for me for free for 20 years, and I'll send you on a mission to meet my friends. But it's the people that persevere, they're the ones that we tell the stories about.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. And this is a big day for Real Deal Talk. And here's why. Because I have not shot a long-form interview in about a year. And the reason why is because we launched a brand new company, Real Deal Wellness, from scratch. And from the time we started to build out, I put it about 80, 90 hours a week into this business to make sure that we get it going. My wife and I, it's a big deal. And so I put the long forms on the back burner a little bit, and I've been shooting, the only thing I've been shooting, which is quite a bit, over 50 fighter interviews with Epic Fighting, which has been phenomenal. And speaking of, and that is the reason that the man sitting in front of me is here, and the way we connected was through Epic Fighting. Jason Stewart, amazing guy. And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. Talk about coming out, back out into the thing here. Back on the flow. This is literally by far, no question, without a doubt, my most famous guest in the history of Real Deal Talk. This is a big deal, and he is a big deal. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Dr. Greg Reed.
I thought you said we're going to do a little fighting here.
We are not fighting. This is not.
Thank goodness.
If you watched my fighter interviews, you know it's a running joke that I say I'll fight this guy, but I need a firearm.
I'd be a great guy in a fight because I could run real fast and get help.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a great help guy.
There you go.
This is all for show, is what I tell people. This is literally just for show.
Nice.
Not for actually.
It's a place to hang your tattoos.
Exactly. So, Dr. Greg Reed here. Listen. Normally, by the way, everybody knows the way I do my podcast. I love to meet my guests and on the air, we get to know each other live because I don't do any homework on anybody. I never do. However, for you, I had to do some homework out of massive respect because, folks, let me go down some pedigree of stuff that I've found out. And by the way, Greg and I, I've heard about him for years. And we met each other at the actual Epic fight. Two fights ago, we met, and he said, people in my circle have been telling me about you. Mm-hmm. He said, we finally swapped phone numbers, and then I reached down and said, bro, I got to get you on the podcast. He said, I'm in. Just name the day, and I'll clear the whole schedule, his ridiculously crazy schedule. So let's go down the list here. So number one, he's the founder of Secret Knot.
That's right.
Secret Knot, it's the number one networking organization in the world. Okay, so if you're in the anything entrepreneurship or anything of networking, you know Secret Knot.
Yeah, it's a really strange event too. It's because it's known as the greatest event you cannot go to.
Yeah, that's give it to me.
You have to be invited. You have to know somebody to get the secret access, and then when you do, it costs a lot of money to attend, and we don't tell you where it is or who will be there. We just tell you the city, state, and date, and then we drip the secret location as we get near. And by doing that, I don't have to do registration, name tags, because you will not know where it is unless you're invited. And by doing that, we've had private Skypes with Edward Snowden while he's hiding in Russia. We've had President Vicente Fox come in and tell us how George Bush tried to trick him to go to war. You get access to everyone from Oscar winners to nuclear physicists to tell you exactly their side of the story. It's pretty amazing.
Incredible. And I always wondered exactly how you do this. Because I know a guy that I know, Jeff Hoffman. Mm-hmm. Right, Jeff Hoffman spoke with one of your events, yeah?
Many times. Jeff and I are really close, yeah.
Wow.
We're like buddy buddies.
And Jeff Hoffman's huge. Priceline.com, he's the guy. He's big time.
The kiosk is his biggest claim to fame.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you ever go to a airport and you want to get your ticket quicker, he's the guy who helped create the whole kiosk.
Yeah, he's the guy. Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant man. So you're also a world-renowned, number one selling, best-selling author. I've read over 150 books you've written.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. I've been published.
Published in 150 books.
Got 45 languages. But remember, I'm dyslexic, can't spell, can't read, and can't write. So if you pay me Words with Friends, you win every time. So the secret is you work your strengths and you hire your weaknesses.
Yes.
So as you'll see, I'm full of crap.
Yeah.
But I'm not a great wordsmith.
Yeah.
So what I do is I say, boy wants a bike. He gets off his ass. He mows lawns, makes money. Now he's got a bike. My ghostwriters recraft it. It was a glorious Sunday afternoon when a young brat-eyed lad caught the entrepreneurial dream. And they make it into literary form. And by working our strengths, we've inspired the lives of millions.
I love this, man. I love it. And one of them, by the way, I had no idea. And I actually had to go back and look at the book cover because I've read it before. It was you did one with Sharon Lecter, 3 Feet from Gold.
Yeah, 3 Feet from Gold, based on the ability to not give up before the miracle happens.
That's right.
And the whole person in there, Greg, is that's me. That's my whole life story and the journey that we went into. In fact, Don Green, the CEO of Napoleon Hill Foundation, texted me this morning. That's what I was texting while I was waiting for to jump on this call with you.
Unbelievable. And just so you, the 3 Feet from Gold originally came out in Think and Grow Rich, right? That term?
Yeah.
And it was...
let me give you a background.
Yeah, give me some background. So, let's go down.
In 1908, there was this young aspiring magazine reporter. His name was Napoleon Hill. He gained access to the richest man of the world, Mr. Carnegie. It was supposed to be a 30-minute interview. Turned out to be 3 full days and nights. At the end of the interview, Carnegie says, "I like you, and here's an opportunity." Mm. He said, "Work for me for free for 20 years, and I'll send you on a mission to meet my friends. You'll write the first ever formula for success. Do you accept this quest?" And Napoleon Hill reached in his pocket. He had 2 nickels to rub together. He said, "Work for free for what?" And he turned around and says, "Mr. Carnegie, not only will I accept your mission, you can rest assured I'll complete the task." Carnegie says, "Fine, you got yourself a job." Hill says, "Why are they going to talk to me? I'm just a kid. I'm nobody." Yeah. He says, "I'll write you a letter of recommendation. When they see it, they'll know I sent you, give you all the time you want." Sat down with Edison, Einstein, the Fords, the Rockefellers, and wrote the 20th best-selling book in history called Think and Grow Rich. But here's what's really cool. Carnegie was a stickler for action and gave his guests 60 seconds to make up his mind to work for free for 20 years. He started a stopwatch in his pocket. And when Hill said yes, Carnegie pulled out the stopwatch. There was 31 seconds left. But the best part is Carnegie made that same offer to over 250 men before.
Are you kidding me?
Hill. He was the only person to say yes. Everyone else had something called the bad case of the one size. I'll take action once I get the kids out, once I get the big break. And it's the people that take action when the opportunity unveils itself. Those are the ones that we tell the stories about. So this is in 1908. Fast forward 100 years later to the date, the Napoleon Hill surviving family and the foundation that bears his name wrote me the same type letter that Carnegie gave to Hill and gifted it to me. Basically a Willy Wonka ticket to meet any human alive. And now I've written the Think and Grow It series for the last 15 years.
Unbelievable, man.
Wild, right?
Wild.
So for a kid grew up in Del Mar.
In the rough streets of Del Mar.
You have no idea how hard it was. Back in 1974, I had to wear socks one night.
You had to wear socks?
Yeah, it was rough. But I'm getting through it.
How did you make it?
I'm in therapy.
I mean, when the cleaning lady didn't show up, did you actually have to clean something?
You're not going to believe this because I'm still in therapy, but my mom actually made me vacuum the stairs. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, child labor.
Because how do you get, like, the crevices? It's the hardest thing in the house
to
vacuum.
People don't understand what I have gone through, the misery. My son growing up in the same misery, you know, it's kind of hard. I'm trying to keep him out of this street gang called the Del Mar Posse. At night, they break into Maseratis and they detail them.
And they do?
Yeah. You know, they have Perrier chug-a-lug contests. You got to watch out. Yeah. No line. They're crazy.
Fiji.
Exactly.
Yes. Oh, my God. I don't know how you did it. That's and that's where 3 Feet from Gold was birthed, right there.
Well, 3 Feet
the struggles from Del Mar.
Is the story of a guy named R.U. Darby. He had something called gold fever back in the 1980s.
Yeah, tell the story because I love this story.
Well, this guy knew nothing about gold, but everyone was doing it. So it was like the hot trend. And so what he did is he went out west, started digging, and he found a couple nuggets hidden. He got excited, so he buried it and, you know, covered it and went home and told his family and friends. They chipped in money to buy equipment to pull it out by the ore cart. And when it came out, it was filled with gold. Woohoo, they're rich.
Right.
But then the gold ran out. They kept digging, but there's no more gold.
Yeah.
Defeated, Darby walks out of the mine and says, "I quit," and sees a junk man walking by. He says, "Hey, buddy, give me a couple $100. We'll save the mine, the deed, the equipment. There's no more gold here. I quit." Well, the junk man pays him $200 before he could change his mind because the equipment was worth $10,000 alone.
Yeah.
Well, what happens is the guy goes to a local engineer and says, "What happened? This guy hit gold and ran out." And the engineer laughs. He goes, "That's mining 101. Everyone knows that gold runs in a straight line. It's called the gold vein. Darby came in one side, hit gold, and popped back into dirt." He says, "Go back to where they discovered treasure. Go 90 degrees, 3 feet the opposite way. You'll tap back into the vein." Not only did the junk man pull millions upon millions of dollars out, but that's what fills Fort Knox today.
Come on.
And the moral is, how many times have we or someone we know quit one class short from a degree or sales or marketing or marriage? It's easy to quit, but it's the people that persevere, they're the ones that we tell the stories about.
Unbelievable. He was literally three feet away.
Goal.
from the biggest vein ever.
Well, think about in Super Bowl. Almost all Super Bowl victories are 3 feet, 1 yard line away. This is what it, there's so many analogies that'll come down to this, but when you look at it, that's usually what it is. And the reason, like, these college people that quit one class short from a degree is because at the end of the day, they went to school doing something they probably are not passionate about, like to be an accountant, right? But they're an artist. Well, they know if they get that degree, then they're committed to become something they don't want to be. So sometimes we have to find ourselves along the journey.
And so how, and I was, we're going back, by the way. You know, if you've ever listened or watched my podcast, I'm gonna dig back into your backstory a little bit too. But I love, I knew we were gonna get off on a tangent right away. It's just beautiful. So talk to me about the 3 feet from gold. That you said there's so many ways you can attribute it. What is the main reason? Is this the main reason that most people just don't have the perseverance, the stamina? Why is it that people give up when it gets too hard?
Well, in 3 feet from gold, one of the guys I interviewed created something called super string theory. If you ever watch Big Bang Theory, Sheldon figured it out. And what it came down to is I asked him a question. I go, what's the difference between people who succeed and those who fail? And here's his answer. Successful people seek counsel, but failures listen to opinion.
I love that.
And I said, what's the difference? He goes, opinions based on ignorance, lack of knowledge, inexperience, like all your family friends who've never done what you want to do.
Come on.
Counsel's based on wisdom, knowledge, and mentorship. So if I go to a family friend and say, I'm going to become a best-selling author, they're going to try to do everything to talk me out of it, to protect me, to keep me safe, and I'm dyslexic. And guess what? They've never written a best-selling book. But if I hang out with Mark Victor Hansen or Sharon Lecter and I say, what do I do? They're going to say, sit down. Here's what you need to know, and give you counsel based on wisdom, knowledge, mentorship. If we would spend our activities only seeking counsel and ignoring opinion, that is the day, that's the moment your life will change.
Unbelievable. That's so simple.
So simple. Everything we're going to talk about today is simple. And that's one of the greatest things about the people that are the most successful. They're also the most available.
Unreal. Because I remember when we, my wife and I launched Real Deal Wellness, we went to a few people to kind of, quote unquote, pitch the idea. And they're like, I don't know. I don't think this is going to work. Like, what are you doing? This is not good. The price point's too low. You know what I mean? Like, blah, blah, blah. But then I went to some other counsel, said, oh, you're onto something. I said, okay. And not that I needed that, but it was just interesting.
Well, it's funny you even say that, because at Secret Knock, in a couple of weeks from now, we've got the guy who invented something called OfferUp. It's an app on your phone.
Oh, something.
Okay, well, not everybody knows what it is, but I asked him, I said, at the end of the day, I go, did all your investors think you're crazy? He goes, no, not one of them. They believed in me. But everyone that didn't invest, yes, they did.
So they
thought he was crazy.
Thought he was so crazy. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Only
yeah.
listened to the people who believed in him.
Yeah. Oh, that, what a crazy concept.
Right? Well, all these people, it's so interesting how simple and close we are 3 feet. For example, Brian Smith, he'll be coming again to Secret Knock, and he's the guy who created UGG boots, you know, a multi-billion-dollar brand.
Yeah.
And I said, how was it your first year? And he goes, oh, it was horrible. He goes, we only sold 38 pair. I go, why didn't you quit? He goes, I couldn't afford to. I go, what do you mean? He says, I borrowed too much money from my family and friends, and I had a back room full of UGG boots, so I figured I'd sell them. Then I'd quit, because say I'd give it a shot, but then Oprah ended up making it her favorite things, and it blew up and became a great success.
Oh, my gosh. 3 feet from gold.
3 feet from... Isn't it interesting?
And it's so funny that... Because with Real Deal Wellness, I straight up, and put this on the air, I borrowed money from a most beautiful, amazing family and friend of mine. There's absolutely no way I'm quitting, because I'm going to make sure that they get their money back, that they bet on, that they were willing to bet on me and my wife with a dream and just an idea that came to us. They're willing to bet on. There's no way I'm quitting. That's motivating me more than anything.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. That's what's missing in today's society. It's the difference between being committed and interested. So if you start a brand new restaurant because it's a hot trend and you're interested, as soon as things go wrong, you're going to quit. If you inherit the family Italian restaurant that's been in the namesake for generations, you're going to find a way to make it through.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of people just don't have that commitment level anymore.
So let's talk about that here. What's happening now in, like, with our society? What are we calling the kids right now that are teenagers? Are they, I don't even know all the terminology, X things, Z, Gen Z,
X-Men, I don't know. I have no idea.
What trajectory are we going in right now where everybody's, all the kids right now are glued to their phones, they're on TikTok, Snapchat, What's like, where's this going to go? This going to implode? Is this going to be like,
no, it's just,
or it's just opportunity.
It's opportunity. It's okay. Redirect. I'll give you an example. When you and I were kids, we'd play with BB guns and, Nerf balls. Right. And today they're playing with this. And I sat someone down who was a very intelligent person from Harvard. And I said, you know, this is frustrating me because I can't pull my kid away from this thing. He goes, you don't understand. He goes, that's just their activity. Just like when you were a kid, that was your activity, that's their activity. And things have progressed. He goes, you sound like your great-grandfather when you played Kiss albums.
Yeah.
Turn down that music, right? And now it's the commercial for the brand new car that's coming out. He says, so things are just evolving. And so I started looking at it and said, okay, how do we start seeing things from a different perspective? My son's only 12. And what's interesting is he got, I think, $7,000 a couple years ago or a few years ago from his grandparents. I said, what do you want to do with it? I go, let's go put it in the bank. He says, no, go buy me a Bitcoin. I go, what the hell's a Bitcoin? He goes, well,
your son said this?
Yes.
12 years old.
Yeah, but he did it when he was 7, I believe.
7?
So, yeah. So we went and bought him a Bitcoin. And so and I got some. And now we are doing okay. And so my son's actually worth more money than almost all adults that I know.
Shut
at
up.
12 years old because, again, yes, he's on these video games, but he was on
he knew it more than you did.
Because he was on the cutting edge of seeing what was happening. And that's what I'm saying. It's just a different vehicle. And here's what's really cool. I did a podcast recently with somebody, and they changed my perspective of how I raised my kid.
Yeah.
And this is a really interesting one.
I want to hear this.
This changed everything. I sat him down, and well, I was doing this interview, and they asked me a question. Said, do you give your son money to do things he doesn't like to do around the house? Mow the lawn, take out the trash, make his bed. I said, of course. I go, I'm going to teach my son the power and the respect of earning income and the power of money. And she said, that's a shame. You're ruining your child forever. I expected more. From a student's mindset, I said, teach me. She goes, think about it. You're training your child from the earliest thought, the earliest of memory. The only way to get paid money is to do something they don't like to do.
Wow. Wow.
And I just had the epiphany.
Wow.
And I sat him down and said, Colt, man, you make these killer videos and TikToks, back to the technology. And says, from now on, I go, I got a social media following. You make all that. I'll pay you your allowance for what you excel at. And how about you make the bed for living in this ocean, you know, view estate that we do? And we changed our conversation. So now when the brand new Jordans come out, he says, Dad, how many TikToks you need for the new kicks?
I have goosebumps, dude. This is huge.
Yeah. So simple, right?
I've never heard this.
Yes. Well, and also you got to be careful
because that's a job.
Yes.
That's what we're programming them for, and that's what our society wants.
There you go.
And that's what schools program.
And what if you actually work smart and not hard? And it was very interesting, again, because, you know, when things were challenging through the last couple of years, you know, my kid sees his money going up through the roof through all this other stuff, and he goes, I don't get why you guys are working so hard. different mindset.
Yeah.
And they listen to everything. I always say, work your strengths, hire your weaknesses. Work your strengths, align your weaknesses. Right after COVID happened, we had our first party, and I'll never forget this. And we invited a bunch of people.
So COVID shut you down?
Shut me down for a couple of years.
Yeah.
It was a great experience. Let's come back to that.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But at this time, I said, Cole, we're going to have a bunch of people over. Go make your bed, clean up thing, do your collaboration, your contribution. About 15, 20 minutes later, his best friend comes down. He has a handful of cash. And he goes to his dad, says, hey, can you put this in the bank for me? I go, where'd you get that? He goes, your son gave it to me. I go, for what? He goes, I made his bed. I took out the trash and I cleaned up his closet. So I called my son down and said, Cole, get down here. And he goes, yeah. And I go, did you just pay him money to do those things? He goes, yeah. I go, why'd you do that?
You told me.
He says, work your strengths, hire your weaknesses. I had other things I needed to do.
Too good. This is too good. Oh, my. What would you say? Okay.
Almost every day I run into this because I go, fair enough, because they see things from a different perspective. You know, when he got in this bad, you know, bike crash of 6 months ago, and now he's recovering and he wants to ride
again. How old is he now?
12. He'll be 13. And,
wait. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing about this.
Yeah.
Was it an e-bike?
Yeah, he was riding his e-bike in the bike lane. Wearing full gear, he's going the speed limit, had a light on, and a car just pulled out in front of him at dusk, and they just didn't see each other. It's just a legitimate accident. However, he has the most severe brain injury a human being can have. There's nothing higher than what he has. And they're supposed to be in a coma 6 months and maybe speak after, you know, 2 years, and he's a prolific young man. 60 days later, he walked out of the hospital, shaking everyone's hand, saying, thanks, guys, I got this from here. And now it's been 6 months later. He's recovering like no one's ever seen. And he's the first human that we know of his age ever recover. And so it's just phenomenal to watch. And we believe it's the mindset. It's the stuff we taught him along the journey. But there's so many people that came to his aid of local anomalies that you know, people normally don't have access to. That red light therapy. All the stuff that you have out there is what we gave our son access to. And it's those modalities, the peptides, the you know things that we probably can't even talk about. Yeah. Those are the things that actually healed him.
Because the body can naturally heal itself. We just have to know how to trigger those natural healing properties. Most people don't know that because we're all priced out, or the average person is priced out of this type of healing because the mainstream doesn't want you to really know about it. They want you to rely on pills, right? We can go down that forever. But this is a big deal.
It is the real deal. And that's what's really nice because these things do work. We are a walking, living example of doing things that should not be done. And the doctors at Rady's, by the way, were the greatest in the world. They saved his life 100%. Yeah. But we believe these other modalities are what gave him back his life.
Wow.
And so they would walk in the hospital and, you know, we'd be doing these different modality treatments that we can talk off air.
Yeah.
And there was like Colonel Klink, I see nothing. And they just walk out because they wanted to see. And now they're coming to us saying like, you know, what did you guys do? What was that? And it's pretty neat because we want to help other people.
Incredible, man.
Yeah. There you go.
And now, okay, so now I have to touch on this because I am horrified at this e-bike craze. And I'm looking at these kids flying all over the place, up and down the street, in the street, not like helmet. The thing is not to have the strap on, and it's freaking me out, dude, because my son's 9 and I don't want my kids having one of these. How do you feel about this now? Especially now with what's happened, obviously.
Well, this is
what do we do?
This is a touchy conversation and topic because my son happens to be one of the most famous e-bike riders in the world. And so he's got a giant TikTok following and things and gets hundreds of thousands of views every time he just blows his nose.
This interview is brought to you by Real Deal Wellness. This is my wife and I started a wellness center about a few months ago. And this is a big deal because we're making wellness affordable for everyone. That's the mission here. We offer red light therapy, cryotherapy, infrared sauna, compression therapy, halo therapy, which is dry salt therapy. At a price that's never been seen before in the wellness industry. It's a membership-based business. You join, you have unlimited access to our center for less than $100, $99 a month, Real Deal Wellness. Come down, join the club, join the mission, let's go.
So it's very interesting. And we went to him and says, you know, we don't really feel comfortable for you riding again. And here's his response. He goes, so let me get this straight. I'm 12 years old. I was outside, not on the computer. I was living my passion. I'm riding my bike in the bike lane, going the speed limit, wearing all the gear that you asked me, full face helmet, had my thing on, a car hits me, and now I'm punished for life.
What was your response? Was that your response right there?
I'm giving you the response. I'm facing it right now. I'm like going, that's epic. So what we did is we end up fixing up his bike. It is all 100% there. He's just not at the point to go ride even when he's ready.
Yeah.
When he is, then we can negotiate at that time.
But
right now, I'm not too excited about getting back on. On the same note, he didn't do anything wrong.
Correct. Well, and that right there is what scares me the most. Mm-hmm. You can follow all the rules.
Well, this is the same in business, though. Okay?
True.
So the
True.
Same thing.
True.
Back to the COVID thing, right? I was doing everything correct. Perfect. The COVID wasn't my fault, and that happened.
Right.
Guess what? I opened a furniture store. You and I were talking off air.
Oh, my gosh.
The month of the housing crash, right, in 2007.
Seven, eight.
There you go. I mean, so sometimes we can do everything. So does that mean I never do business again? Does that mean?
I now know that furniture store. You had mentioned it earlier. And I now, because I was around then, I started the business in 2004 and I had a furniture store in 2008. We thrived because we went on to Craigslist.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Anyway, that's great.
Yeah. That's good for you. Thanks for helping us. So that's all how you look at it. So I want to go back to these books. It's interesting of all the different like people, 3 feet from gold,
because
it was great. I got to interview such amazing people. Well, one of my favorites from that was a guy named Truett Cathy. He started a company called Chick-fil-A Restaurants. And I asked him, I said, hey, I want to be a billionaire like you. What do I do different? And he said, that's easy. He goes, stop planning. I go, what? I go, that goes against everything I ever learned and taught. He goes, well, last year you had a lot of plans. I go, yeah. He goes, how'd that work out for you? He goes, 5 years ago you had a master plan. He goes, I guarantee you hit a goal from time to time because you're scrappy, but it didn't go as you expected.
Because you're scrappy.
And I said, I go, what's the secret? He goes, look for and capitalize unexpected opportunities. I go, give me an example. He says, if I'm on the sofa and I want to get to the end of the street, that's my goal. I have to have stickability that I keep my eye on the prize. He goes, I get off my back and start moving towards that direction and look for opportunity. He goes, did a kid leave a skateboard or bicycle out I could borrow to make my journey short? If I get lucky, I'll wave down a neighbor driving by and hitch a ride. He goes, either way, I'll get to my goal. I'm just not so caught up in exactly how it has to transpire.
Wow. Because, as you know, Greg, rarely did the plan that you had set forth, does it ever go that way? Rarely.
I don't know.
If ever.
I don't know if it ever has. Again, I get to sit down with the most impactful people that change your world, and not one of them has told me that story A to B. Every single thing has a thing. Steve Wozniak, he started a company called Apple Computers with Jobs. And I said, how did you guys create so much success? And he goes, we embraced our lack. I go, what? He goes, it makes no sense. He goes, well, we embraced what we did not have. And I said, give me an example. He says, when these little microchip processor things came out, he goes, they were so expensive. He goes, we could only afford one of these little chips. He goes, Jobs sold his car. I sold my calculator. We pulled their money to buy one. He goes, but Hewlett Packard, IBM, they'd make machines that go from A to B with 20. They had all the money of God. He said, I'd pull away five, get it go from A to B with 15. Pull away five, get it to work with 10. Eventually, I found a way to go to A to B using our one chip. He goes, we weren't trying to be innovative. We could afford one freaking chip.
Yeah.
But by embracing it as an opportunity, I found the shortest, cleanest path. And by doing that, we changed the way people do personal computing forever. He goes, where could you be right now in your own life and business if you stop looking at something as your greatest challenge and obstacle, but it could just be your greatest blessing and opportunity?
Yes. Guys. That's, we'll use my Real Deal Wellness. I opened it in the same showroom because of the thing that was going wrong with Real Deal Sleep. It came together.
That's right.
And now this is our lane.
Correct.
I'm now operating in my lane that God designed me to operate in the wellness space.
And if you had to fast forward one of those cameras that goes, and you see it, from beginning to now, in 3 years from now or less, you're going to see this picture of this little warehouse out here and sleep stuff, and it's all going to be transitioned to physical therapies and people helping each other, chiropractic and wellness centers, the whole bit. That is the evolution in which you're going, right?
Correct.
So the whole idea is to see that. Unfortunately, most people, the same story true of Kathy, from the sofa to the end of the street, they plan. And as soon as they go and they don't step on a crack, they break your mother's back and follow the process, and a sprinkler comes on, it goes against plan, they run back home. He goes, the whole idea, look for, capitalize on what you don't see coming. But the best thing about meeting him out in Atlanta, I got to go to his place of business. He said, what do you think of my sandwiches? I go, I've never had one. He goes, change that right now. Walked down to the kitchen, and he made me my first Chick-fil-A sandwich. It was pretty cool.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, so keep going with this, man. I really like this a lot. Like, this is, so what about a big business plan? You have to have one of those, don't you?
You've got to have a vision and a mission and a direction in which you're going. Absolutely. But
like, what's the most important thing for an investor? Like right now, Real Deal Wellness, I'm fielding investors that want to invest in this dream that we now have on the table here of making wellness affordable and accessible to everybody, changing the game, creating a health and wellness movement. Here's the dream. Yeah. Here's the mission.
You and I have talked about it offset.
Yeah.
And the realities are, I don't believe people are going to jump on board to invest in another wellness thing, but they're going to invest in you.
Mm.
Like, if I was going to invest in money, it would have nothing to do with red light therapy. It would have to do with you.
Wow.
Because, again, what you said earlier, I will not let you lose money. I will do everything to throw myself on the sword. Well, as an investor, that's what I want to hear. Not how much my customers are going to love to come and get this in.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
What you're going to do, that's the answer. So I would go with the story over anything. I want to backtrack.
Yeah.
People say, yeah, okay, I've been publishing all these books, 45 languages. I have a star in the Walk of Fame.
Yes.
Honorary PhD.
I forgot to even get into your pedigree.
The president just gave me the lifetime.
Lifetime presidential. Yeah. Yes, I got all.
Guy who doesn't know, I'm the least qualified guy to do what I do. And the whole idea, work your strengths, hire your weaknesses. But I'm going to tell you a story behind it. When you do a book, you write something called a query letter.
Yeah.
who you are, what's your message, why are you an expert, who's going to read your book. I was turned down by 268 publishers, agents, and printers for my first book before someone said yes. Every week I'd send out 8 queries and I get 8 rejections. 268 rejections in a row. The 269th one said, we'll do your book. All we want you to do, change the title, the beginning, the middle, and the end. I didn't take it personal. I'm dyslexic. It was like dog, boat, beaver, car. It made no sense. And so I got a ghostwriter, recrafted it, and one quote from that book was shared 37 million times. You've seen my quote so many times that you don't even know this is my quote. And so I'm bumper stickers, coffee mugs, t-shirts, wall mounts. It says, a dream written down with a date becomes a goal. A goal broken into steps becomes a plan, and a plan backed by action makes your dreams come true. A famous quote shared 37 million times last year alone from a book that was turned down 268 times in a row. The moral is, never let another person or yourself talk you out of what you know to be true.
Wow. Love it, dude. I absolutely love it. And yeah, I knew the quote now because I looked you up. And I forgot to do all your with the so you have a star on the Las Vegas,
yeah, right in front of the Paris Hotel,
6 feet from Elvis?
Six from Elvis.
Elvis,
yeah, trust me, it's wild. You can stand on my star and watch the Bellagio water show.
Yes,
and the whole bit. It's insane. Yeah, it's one of the coolest things. And the only reason I even accepted and pushed for this thing when they offered it was because I figure, look, I'm 61 years old. My kid's 12. He's never going to go to my grave. But for the rest of his life and his kids, they'll go to Vegas and pour one out for the homie, right? There's grandpa. So I figured it'd be kind of cool.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. All right. So now let's go back a little bit. Just go. Back in my day. Go back to where were you born? You were born and raised in San Diego.
Yeah,
in the rough streets of Del Mar.
L.A., but I lived in Del Mar my whole life. Yeah, okay. Del Mar, La Jolla, you know, the Casa.
How was childhood, parents? What was going on there? Like, how did Greg Reed, where did this start beginning? Like, at what point in your life, like in school or high school, you realized you weren't a good student, that you weren't meant to study? I don't know. Tell me. Go back.
Well, again, dyslexic. I barely graduated high school. I mean, I don't know how they let me out, to be honest with you. I saw my last report and I go, how could you let someone graduate with F's and D's? But they did. So I guess back in the 80s, they wanted to get you out of school. But it was interesting. I'll start just at that 17, 18 years old. I wanted to leave and get into sales. And I remember saying to my parents, "Go, I'm leaving. And I'm going to go get into sales." And my dad came to me and says, no, he goes, we'll send you to college anywhere you want to go. Why don't you just go ahead and even take a gap year, but once you go to college? I said, no. I go, I'm going to get into sales and marketing. And he looked at me dead in the eye and says, Greg, you're never going to make a living talking to people.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the first time I made a six-figure income, I was, you know, 20-something. I sent him a W-2. Dear Dad, remember when you said I'd never? And now it's kind of like the running joke in our family.
But I'm assuming you have a good relationship with your dad.
Yeah, he just passed away. But, yes, and it's interesting because, you know.
But that motivated you.
I wasn't going to let another person or myself talk me out of what I knew I wanted to do. That's it. I mean, that's the key to only thing I do different than most people is that I don't listen to the chatter.
And so let me ask you this, because I get, I'm a mentor and a ministry leader at my church in a marketplace ministry. So we deal with a lot of marketplace people and a lot of the people that are, we call them apprentices that we're mentoring. They're telling me these ideas that they have and these businesses that they want to start. And Greg, some of them are horrible, and they're all fired up about it. And God spoke to them to do this thing, but I know that it's never going to make a profit. Mm. Like it's never even going to get off the ground. What do you do then? Like if
you don't want me as a mentor.
Just say, what are you doing?
Okay, here's the answer. Okay, a good mentor will tell you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear.
Of course, yeah.
That's my answer. So, yeah, people don't come to me for a lot of love notes and hugs.
Same with me. They stop coming to me because they know I'm just going to literally tell them what they don't want to hear.
And I just give them the perspective. I also preframe it. I call it the hand in the sand. So I happen to be 37 years sober guy. Mm. You know, kind of talking off thing. I don't drink, smoke. It's not my thing. And so when I was 24, I quit. And I remember I was going to leave rehab because I just didn't want to be there. It wasn't for me. But I didn't want to drink and use. And the counselors, there was a sand volleyball court, and he said, here, grab a handful of sand. And he says, why? He goes, just do it. And he says, understand this, when people give you their input, it's not to mess you up, it's just giving you input from their point of view. So when they say you should do this, say thank you very much. Don't put up a wall, just say thank you. If it works for you, keep it. If not, you let it slip through your finger. Don't yeah but them. So someone says, I'm going to do this. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And as you close your hands, that becomes the program that works for you. So what I share with people, I say, here's your hand in the sand. Here's my viewpoint towards this.
That's the way you phrase it.
Take it or leave it.
Okay, so going back to what you said, don't let anybody tell you otherwise when you know something to be...
Don't let another person talk. They can tell you,
yeah,
but don't let them talk you out of what you know to be true. When I say no, I didn't say hope,
yeah,
or wish or believe. I mean, you know. There's certain things you know. I'll give you an example. You know for a fact that your next little adventure is going to work.
Yeah.
You don't know how, but you know.
100%.
Same thing. So the whole idea is the difference between, I'm not saying hope, wish, believe, but the knowing. You know, I feel like telling you this one quick story.
Yeah.
We're at our event, and there's this guy named Frank Shankwitz. He started a nonprofit. It's called Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Yeah, I wanted to get into this, by the way.
Yeah, grants wishes to terminally ill kids. And we're on stage, and we're ending our interview, and I said, let me ask you, Frank. I go, what did you ask for? What was your wish? And he says, no one asked me. I said, what? You're the founder of Make-A-Wish. No one asked. He goes, no. I go, well, I'm going to grant your wish. Anything you want, I'll give it to you. And he says, I just want my story to be told so my grandkids will know that I did something. So he signed over his life rights, and I said, Frank, I'm going to make this into a major feature film. Just know, I've never made a feature film. And it took 6 years of trials and tribulations, but when we finally came out, we made the ballad for the Oscars, and it's still trending worldwide. It's called Wish Man.
Yes.
And the moral is that everyone can be a hero. You don't need to be a billionaire celebrity to give a pair of socks to a homeless person. Everyone can do some simple act of kindness to have a ripple effect. And I think that's what's missing in society. We think we have to do some grand gesture, but sometimes that little thing that we do for someone has an impact that goes far beyond that we'll ever see.
Keep going with the Make-A-Wish, because I want to get on this topic as well, because I found out you were with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, the and you're a movie producer.
Well, I'm not with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. The founder of Make-A-Wish, I granted his wish, and that was to have his story be told. And that's what we did.
Unbelievable, man.
Yeah, it was amazing. I remember when we did the premiere up in Hollywood, you know, on the Walk of Fame, all the different stuff. It was incredible. And I was driving him back to the airport, and he got out of the car. He's a cowboy guy, big old 6'5" cowboy hat. And he got out of the car. He started walking, and he turned around. I rolled down the window, and he turned around and said, wish granted, and tipped his hat.
Wow. Incredible.
That was
unbelievable.
Awesome. That was awesome.
Unbelievable. Okay, go back to high school. You told your dad you're going to go into sales. You just mentioned that you were sober, so obviously you had an issue, quote unquote.
Yeah, when I was 24, I quit. Yeah.
When did that start? How did it start? Why did it start? Can you go there a little bit?
Yeah.
Just to get your little...
I don't really remember, because again, it's 37 years sober, plus before that I was a little pickled, so... All I know is that, you know, I grew up a kind of affluent lifestyle. Things were good. It wasn't without. I didn't have that lack type thing.
Yep.
Just one of those lifestyles that we grew up with. And now I changed my lifestyle when I was 24 and just never looked back.
And so at that time, did you think like, oh, wow, this isn't good. I'm going down a bad path. Like,
no,
what made
you? I don't have that. That was the hardest thing in modern sobriety, by the way, is I never hit a bottom. You know, I mean, I lived in La Jolla, drove a BMW, made boatloads of money. I didn't have a bottom, one of those things that you hear about.
Right.
So it was really hard going to all the meetings and hearing these, you know, these.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I couldn't relate. And so I didn't really have that. And I realized the power of association. So I joined a men's group where just a bunch of guys would get together of affluence that were doing well. And we talked it out in our daily lives rather than talking about things that were, you know, outside of our normal circle.
Yeah, a much different situation.
Much different situation. Yeah, I couldn't understand that one. So all I knew is that every week back in the 80s, I'd make a boatload of money. I was a sales guy, and on Friday, they give me this giant check, and by Monday, all that money's gone. I was like, well, wait a second, something's missing here, right? So I saw this cycle, and I said, this has got to change. But more importantly, I didn't want to hurt other people. You know, when you have that blackout, and your car's in the driveway, and you go, how did I get here? I go, you know, if I hurt me is one thing, but why would I want to inflict any injury on anyone else? So I decided to check myself in and never look back. Yeah, I checked myself into one of those rehabs and never drank again.
Wow, incredible. Okay, so when you went into sales, what trajectory, at what point, any books that you read back then, what was a turning point where you were like, okay, this is the route that I'm going? entrepreneurship, whatever it was?
Right away. So I got into sales and I just crushed it.
What were your sales? What were you doing for sales?
I sold automotive parts, and then I got into telemarketing, selling CPS, cheap plastic stuff, promotional items like those hats and t-shirts. I killed it. So I did that for many, many years, and then I owned one of the companies. I started it, and I sold it for seven figures here in San Diego, and that's what I did. That was the whole bit. And what's interesting is somebody asked me a simple question. They said, can you speak at our college to figure out how you could start a company and sell it so quick for that much money who can't spell, read, and write very well? And so I went to UCSD, did a talk, and I was walking out, and a kid said, hey, you should write a book. I'm like, well, I've never read a book. That's a great goal. And so my bucket list, that was one of the items on there, and that's why I didn't give up.
What age was that? Would that happen? Do you remember?
39, 40
years old. Yeah. You're walking out and some kid said you should write a book.
Yeah, I go, hey, that's a good one. Yeah, when I was 17, I made a bucket list. You know, like everyone did, 60 items of impossible things, like impossible. And I finished them all at 50, I think, 52, something like that.
Okay, so let's run with this thing right here. Age-wise, I'm 54. Mm-hmm. We've done some good stuff. We've made an impact. All I care about is making an impact. That's it. It's all. But we're not. We haven't arrived yet where I can take a vacation. Like, I'm working 6-7 days a week still. Age, because you just told 39, 40 years old before you even thought about writing a book.
That's right.
Talk to me for people listening and watching right now. They're beating themselves up right now that no matter what age they are, 20s, 30s, 40s, beating themselves up. Why aren't they further ahead? Why haven't they made it? Talk to me about to be patient. Give me the patience thing.
Well, first of all, I'm not a psychologist, so I'm just a regular guy. Yeah. But we all deal with those same situations. I'm 61 years old right now. And what's interesting is I just entered the next chapter of my life where I'm reinventing myself again. So for the first 20 years, I basically was a sales guy, you know, or a kid. From 20 to 40, I was a sales guy. And now from 60 till the last, I'm going to become a publisher and a farmer. So I'm completely changing my life. And I think that's what keeps you alive and keeps you fresh. Because once you've hit a pinnacle in your field, it's really cool to have a adjustment and a pattern interrupt. It's kind of like you're a mattress guy. Now you're going to this next one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And so, but as far as the people beating themselves up, what do you say to them? Mm. What do you say to them? Be patient, relax, don't worry about
it. You're in good company. Welcome. Welcome to the tribe, right? We're all part of the same circle, man. That's it.
What is it about people like us that are so determined, so basically psychotic, that they're going to get to that goal? Like you said, we don't exactly know how we're going to get there. We just know that we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. Like, what is that? Is that inbred in us? Is it learned? Go down that a little bit.
Well, like, it goes down to confidence, and confidence brings competence, and it all kind of starts flowing together, right?
Yep.
And a lot of times we can look at ourselves and go, look, I've been working my tail off this whole bit. I should be doing better than this.
Yeah.
But that comparison theory is the kiss of death, no matter what. And the worst thing you can do is get onto Instagram and start seeing all these kids with, you know, fake Hollywood money and rental cars and stuff like that and say how great they are and go, I'm not doing as good as that kid, because those kids are not doing that good.
Right.
It's all an illusion. So we just got to keep things in check. So I'm very much becoming an advocate of becoming more of a content provider than a user. So that death scrolling all nonstop is not productive activity under any circumstance whatsoever. So I've been working on that. And here's how. During the day, I delete my apps for Instagram, things of this nature, so I'm not even inclined mathematically to go back to there just by instinct. So I can only get my emails, LinkedIn's, things of this nature that are income-producing activity. I'm going to say again, income-producing activity.
Yep.
And if it's not income-producing activity during those moments of that time, then I make sure that I refocus myself.
You said you delete those apps.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I just take them off my phone. So you go Instagram, hit it. Delete app, delete it. That's it. And then at nighttime, when I want to do that, I go to the thing. I add Instagram, reload, log in.
That's what you do?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about this further with the kids, mm-hmm. since we're on this Instagram topic or phone topic. Because I have a lot of parents in our circle that aren't allowing their kid to have a phone till they're 12, 13, 14. Have said, I don't care. This is just, we're not allowing them to have a phone because it's a distraction and blah, 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 blah. Let's talk about this a little bit. What's your view on that as far as allowing your kid to have a phone, or what age, or tell me about that?
Well, I'm a horrible example of that because we gave our kid a phone at 4 or 5.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, yeah.
Me too.
And he's crushing. Again, I bet you my kid's got more money than the other person telling him not to do it because he saw things and studied things differently. Same thing when it comes down to the e-bike, same thing. So he studied and watched every YouTube and everything before he ever bought the bike. He knew exactly what it was, how it was going to be, how it was going to, I mean, meticulous. So you can use anything as a crutch or as a tool or however you're going to look at it. But the realities are, I don't believe in holding people away for something that's going to help them expand in life.
And so change their mind for the parents that are like, no, no, no. Because I tell people I'm not the one to talk to.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on that one too.
I gave my daughter a phone at 5. Yeah. I set her up an Instagram at like 3.
Yeah.
She has her own Instagram from day one because I wanted to.
And my kid's a public figure, so he's got a website. He's got all of his different things, social media. He's crushing it. So, yeah, God bless that little kid. I don't know how he does it. It's interesting. When he got in the accident, I didn't know how famous he was. He was just my kid. It's kind of like having a famous dad that you don't know is famous until you see a movie and you go, oh, my gosh, my dad's a movie star. I had no idea he was famous. And then all of a sudden when it happened, started sending him videos, get well, from Danny Trejo to celebrities and Olympians. I'm going, who is this kid? Right? So it was pretty interesting to watch that journey.
And what if you had held him off the phone and not given him a phone?
Ta-da! But again, he's a good steward, though, of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I want to tell you a quick story.
That's the thing. You got to be a good steward.
I want to tell you a quick story. One of my favorite interviews I ever did, because you were talking about fighting earlier.
Yeah.
It was this guy is a poet and a philosopher. His name's Evander Holyfield. He's a boxing legend back in the day.
Kind of where their name real deal.
There it is. Yeah. And I asked him, I says, what makes you such a champion? He says, that's easy. He goes, I have a higher standard. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, in sports, I showed up early. I left late. I invented exercises. I had a higher standard and I won more championships. He goes, where could you be in your own business if you raise your standard? I go, yeah, but didn't it hurt being in a fight? He says, yeah, it hurts. He goes, but when you're in a fight, you don't focus on the pain. You don't focus on the blows. As soon as you do, you end up on your back knocked out. But that's what people do outside the ring. They focus on gas prices, war, economy, and then they wonder why they never become a champion. And he pulled me in tight in the Adonis of a man missing half an ear bitten off by Tyson. Yeah. He says, you know what the funny thing is? He says, when you do win the championship, he says, everyone comes to their feet and they chant your name. They raise your hand in victory and a guy puts a big shiny belt around your waist. He says, at that moment and at that second, you don't feel even one of the punches you took along the journey. But the guy in the losing locker room has every bruise, every excuse for the rest of their life, wishing they would have raised their standard.
Wow. And so right now, talk to me about people. Like if every time I'll float onto Facebook for 5 minutes and all I'm seeing is negative posts, hate posts. Like, what can we say to the, like, what is happening right now? And obviously our country, the matrix, as I call them, they want us infighting. They, right, for the rest of our lives, they want us infighting. They love this because then they can control us. But the people right now that are just spewing negativity all day, every day, on Facebook about how bad this president is, how bad that president is. What do you say to that as far as what's going on? What kind of advice would you give these people?
Well, I don't believe that they are controlling us now, especially since we've seen such a transition. I mean, they did everything possible to adjust how things would go, and it didn't go as planned. So maybe there isn't as much power as we thought then.
Explain that. Well, like in what way?
Well, a president was elected
against
all odds, thrown everything against him and did everything through the kitchen sink at him and still couldn't get the results that they wanted. So when we're saying that they were being controlled, I don't know if that's really necessarily true because people are starting to see through a lot of different things and things for themselves. But whatever political party we're on, here is my philosophy. And it's so simple, and I'd like to just end on this one.
Yeah.
Whoever our president is, independent, Republican, Democrat, whatever it is, I believe as an American, we should support them wholeheartedly. It's like rooting for the plane's captain to have a heart attack and we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
That makes no sense. So I would never want to root the person who's leading us to have any demise, no matter who's in office. So that's my viewpoint.
Yep. And it makes a lot of sense, that viewpoint. The problem is, a lot of people aren't going to see, they're not going to go with that viewpoint.
Agreed.
Which is unfortunate.
And that is their viewpoint.
And also on that same vein here, who actually controls your happiness?
Well, I wrote the book called The Secret of Happiness and made a movie on there. We just won 13 awards this last year.
Go into it.
Worldwide film festivals. It's called The Secret of Happiness. And
let's talk about The Secret of Happiness.
Well, I thought I had the answer before I started the book. That's why I wrote it. And I was wrong. God, I hate when that happens. Well, I love when that happens. So I wrote the book, The Secret of Happiness, thinking I had the end in mind. And I went out on a date with this gal, and I thought for sure I was going to impress her. I go, I'm writing this book called The Secret of Happiness, but I already know the answer. Here's what it is. And I told her, and here's what I said. I said, the secret of happiness is a subtractive equation and not an additional equation. And she says, what do you mean? I go, well, you do not find happiness by adding a car, a house, a boat, a relationship, but you do find it by subtracting shame, guilt, remorse, and toxicity. Mm. So the secret of happiness is a subtractive equation. And I sat back and I was so confident. And she goes, nah, she goes, I think you got that wrong. I go, why? And she goes, well, let me explain. She goes, I'm from Mexico. And she goes, my entire village, their entire whole, from the beginning of time they can remember, has tried to come to America. And I'm the first person to make it through. And she goes, you would have thought I won a gold medal in the Olympics when I actually got my green card. She goes, but more importantly, when I got up here and got my college education, I bought my first car and it was a nice one. And when I used my FICO credit score and was a true citizen, they celebrated me back like I was a hero. She goes, so as you see as taking away something gives you happiness, by me adding these simple things gave hope to an entire generation back home.
Wow.
I said, fair enough. So then I started going on this rabbit hole quest of highs and lows, talking to monks, all this different stuff. Because people say, like, happiness is an inside job. If it's going to be, it's up to me. And I talked to this monk, and he goes, no, that's absolutely incorrect. I go, what do you mean? He goes, happiness is dependent. I go, on what? He goes, other people. I go, what are you talking about? That goes against everything we believe. He goes, let's just say you're at work, and you just got a raise. $200,000 a year, the corner office, and they give you a brand new Mercedes and a Rolex watch. You are fired up. You're driving home to tell the family and friends. As soon as the door opens, your wife is crying. The kids are running around. What happens? Your mood is gone. So your happiness truly is dependent on the circle and sphere in which you surround yourself with. So I kept going, all right, then what is this answer? And the secret of happiness comes down to this. This is it. The secret of happiness is the definition in which you give it.
Wow. That's it. Because not everybody's definition of it is going to be, not one's going to be the same. So, okay, let's go further.
No, because, that's the end of that.
No meaning. We're going to go from happiness here. Because I've recently heard, listened, read that happiness can come and go quickly, but joy can't. Mm. Let's talk about joy.
Yeah, joy, contentment.
True joy.
Joy, yeah.
Lasts. Happiness does not. That's what I've heard recently.
That's great.
Somebody said it.
Yeah, it's a good comment.
Yeah. And what you just said about is so important, because the problem is everybody's comparing themselves of somebody else's happiness, it looks like.
Or,
well, if I had that, I'll be happy.
How about this? Happiness is a moving target, we discovered.
Mm.
It's a definition of what you give it. So I woke up and said, man, if I could wake up on time without the alarm waking me for this interview today, that'd be pretty cool. I'd be happy. And I said, man, if I can get to this interview and there's no traffic, I'd be happy. Boy, if Starbucks is close by, that's going to be pretty cool. So my little happiness, I got these little targets nonstop. We all do. But most people don't realize it. They don't give themselves that target, so therefore they don't know. It's kind of like this. It's easy to hit a goal the moment you have a goal to hit. But it's like archery. If I just fling it in the air, you don't know if you're on track. But when you give yourself a goal, then you know if you're doing well or not. Unfortunately, most people say, I want to be rich, happy, powerful, success, but they don't give themselves a target, so they never know if they're on track.
And so on the same vein, so is it important to have not only mini wins, but celebrate wins?
Celebration of wins.
How do you feel about celebrating?
Important thing. Celebration of win is the single most important thing we can do as a human being, and we miss that. And this is one of the biggest things we do when I do presentations around the world. Is there's 10 things going on in every single person's life. 8 of them are awesome. 1 of them is fishy. 1 of them suck. We only focus on the suck. And we don't sit there and say, hey, good job paying rent this month. Hey, nice job keeping the bills on. Hey, nice job raising your kid. We don't do that enough.
Right.
And so I believe we should celebrate those little ones.
Yeah.
And I do it by mini victories. I'll go, if I have a nice little win, I'll go buy myself a new belt. Or I'll go do some, because I statistically win a plant it into my brain that I did something of value and therefore I should be rewarded for it.
This is so important because almost no one's celebrating any wins. And a win, I post almost every week. I'll say, hey, it's been another hard-fought week, but another beautiful, glorious dinner date night with my beloved family. And the win that week was we made it through the week. Yeah. Without imploding,
well, it's also back to the social. I've realized because I started doing a study on it is that you go ahead and let's just say you're written up in Forbes magazine as being the top cool new entrepreneur in San Diego. Well, when you post that, you're going to only get 3 or 4 interactions. But when you sit there and say, "Oh, I got a flat tire on the way to work today. Life sucks." You're going to get 1,000. And I realized that unfortunately, people feed the negative. So therefore, we just have to be careful how much we also share our wins, so it's also not discouraging.
That's interesting.
Right?
Very interesting.
Wild.
Why is the people focus on the negative and they love getting caught up in the pity party? And
yeah, it's interesting. And back to the Wishman story.
Yeah.
I want to give you the secret of how I figured it out. Again, you work your strengths, hire your weaknesses, yep. And here's the other one. Surround yourself with people that are getting the results you want. Seek counsel, not opinion. So I was frustrated for 6 years. I was getting nowhere in Hollywood. Everyone's telling me, you know, what they're going to do for us, but I just wasn't getting anywhere. I couldn't understand it. So I got a meeting with a guy named Jules, and he started a company called Showtime Television. And I was in his estate, and I said, Jules, just be straight with me. What is it that I'm missing? Why am I not getting it? And he gave me the secret in just seconds. He said, in Hollywood, a yes means no. A no means no. A maybe is all you're looking for, and you're just wasting time listening to your yeses. And I went back, and I'm like, that's right. For 5 years, I'm coming up, and they're going, yeah, baby, we're going to make you a star, $14 million. He goes, that's just their way of saying no. He goes, a no is a no. Look for a maybe. So then what happened is I went to Hollywood, and every time someone go, yeah, we're going to do this, I just went, oh, that's a no. And then finally someone says, you know what? That sounds like a good idea. Let's set up a meeting with a studio and see if we can get some. That's all I was looking for.
Wow.
7 months later, we make the film.
Come on.
I know.
How do we?
Cracking the codes. Everything is a code. And most people just don't see it. And so I just spend my time looking for it. In the military, it's called MICE code, M-I-C, military interrogation code.
Yeah.
So if I have a prisoner and I'm torturing him and I say, I'm going to take your life, and they go, I'll die for my country. That's not going to work. Well, we're going to hurt you. I'm sadomasochist. Go for it. And then you show them a picture of your Mustang. We're going to scratch your car. Don't do that. Well, all they're going to do is mess with them because of the car.
Yeah.
Well, people find their MICE codes, and you can use that for positive or negative. Unfortunately, society has found that poking those things to answer your questions, all they're doing is hitting our MICE codes. That's why people are reacting to it.
And so what about talk to me about having haters and people that are naysayers. How much do you thrive off of anybody that's telling you can't do it?
Zero. I don't feed at all.
No.
And in fact, I have a rule. Every year I make a new year's resolution, and this is my new year's resolution. This can be an interesting one.
Yeah, yeah.
I am not allowed to say anything in text, email, or social media that's negative.
This was your resolution?
Yes. And boy, is it hard. Because someone will come up and say,
you mean, and also responding?
Nothing. So
that includes time, that?
Yes. So here's what's happening now. People go, you know, whatever.
Tell me some of the stuff.
No, I won't feed it. But let's just say they say negative, 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 negative. I say, thank you for your feedback.
Yes. So I'm finally getting negative stuff, mm-hmm. and like I'm celebrating. Because yes, that means I'm doing something. Because you don't have negative stuff. Talk to me about that. You don't have haters or negative people.
Yeah, I'm not going to feed that. No. I think that it attracts. If you believe in the law of attraction,
yeah,
like
yeah,
I do, okay? Correct, thoughts
yeah,
are things.
Yeah, that's where
the book.
Yep.
So
yep.
Bob Proctor.
I want to talk about that because yeah. I do. That's where this all started for
yeah.
me was
so
law of attraction.
So I choose not to have this conversation. Isn't that interesting?
I just love celebrating because then I know I'm doing something.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah.
And I thank everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for your feedback. So my mentor, his name's Dave Corbin. He lives here in San Diego.
Yeah.
You should have him one day on your show.
For sure.
And he wrote a book called Illuminate. And he says, you got to accentuate the positive, and they say eliminate the negative. Opposite. Accentuate the positive and illuminate the negative.
What does that mean?
So I remember one time I had a negative book review, and it was like all these positive, and one person gave me 1 star, it sucks. And so I said, Dave, what do? I'm embarrassed people are going to see it. He goes, illuminate. So I wrote an email to my email list of 37,000 people and said, hey, everyone, great news. My book is out. It's a great success. Most people love it. This guy says it sucks. Here's the link. What happened is by illuminating it, what do you think happened? Everyone went to it. Amazon ended up getting so many complaints. They took down the thing, and it became a bestseller that day.
Wait.
Yes. Imagine I'm a single guy. I go out on a
first date. What do people do? They went to defend you?
Oh, yeah. I didn't have to do nothing. One guy says, here, go check it out. Right? Illuminate. If I go out on a date, I got a pimple, I knock on the door, let's get this out of the way, Kilimanjaro, you laugh at it, I don't have to worry about hiding it. Every single thing that's negative in my life, I illuminate right away. And that way it gets rid of it.
That's so funny. I love that. Okay, so thoughts or things?
Bob Proctor. He was in this project called The Secret. Yep, and by the way, the publisher of The Secret will be at Secret Knock in a couple weeks, so you'll be able to meet him. And what's really cool about this thing is that we did this book called Thoughts Are Things, How Your Thoughts Become Realities. And again, we began the book with the answer, your thoughts become your truth. And sure enough, we were wrong.
And this interview is brought to you by Real Deal Wellness. This is a company my wife and I just launched, Real Deal Wellness. It's a membership base. We're charging the lowest price that has ever been offered for wellness in San Diego in history. You're going to get cryotherapy, red light therapy, infrared sauna, compression therapy, and halo therapy, which is dry salt therapy. Real Deal Wellness. You can go to our website, realdealwellness.net. Also, subscribe to the channel, share it, like it. We love you. We appreciate you. Have a nice day. Okay.
Right away. And it was so frustrating, and again, in a good way. I'm a student, so to me, I love changing my mind. I'd be a horrible politician or a great one, because if someone gives me a different viewpoint, I celebrate it, and yeah. I'll put a spotlight on it. I'll illuminate.
Illuminate.
So we went on this journey for a couple of years to interview people all around the world to find out how your thoughts become things. And then we realized thoughts are not things. It's only thoughts backed by action become things.
Mm.
If thoughts were things, I'd be a bagel with cream cheese right now because I'm hungry, right? But if I get out of here and go to Einstein's, my thoughts become things by the actions in which we take.
Yes.
There's a bumper sticker that says, I can learn everything I need to know about you by the company you keep. Bullshit. I can learn everything I need to know about you by the circumstances and situations which you're in. Because your thoughts, backed by your actions, created your realities. Period.
Period.
If you sit there and tell me you want a Lamborghini but don't have a Lamborghini, it means you did not want a Lamborghini bad enough. Because you are not willing to do what's necessary to make that dream a reality. Period.
Period.
We are where we choose to be. Speaking of Lamborghini.
That's a fact.
That's a fact. Well, and a fact is only, okay, by definition, yeah. Again, because I'm going down a rabbit hole, there's no such thing as a fact. A fact is only what the masses of population agree to be true. When you were a kid, it was a fact that Pluto was a planet. It was a fact you could catch AIDS from a toilet seat. It was a fact that standing 2 feet away from someone in COVID would give you COVID. So a fact's not true. A fact is just what we agree to be true at the moment. And the founder of Chuck E. Cheese told me one time, it says, with enough examinations, all facts become false. But that's a whole nother story.
That's a whole nother. Yeah. What, were you going on another story that I can't remember?
Yeah, I'm sure it's going down a rabbit hole. But it's really interesting going all these deep dives because, again, I'm just a regular cat. Grew up on the beach in San Diego, you know, skateboarding, right? So to me, to have access to all these amazing humans to find out exactly what they did in real time in their own voice has been such a great journey.
Okay, so on that note, how did you get into Secret Knock? Talk to me about the evolution of Secret Knock. Where did it come from? What the idea? You obviously are a big proponent on connecting with others.
And sharing.
How did that happen?
Sharing the access is the big thing for me.
Yeah.
Because me having this person and talking about him right now, and you go, oh, it's easy for you. No, in 2 weeks, I got an event. They're all going to be there. You can come hang out with them. That's the me. So it's like most people want to have velvet ropes and no, here's access. So I'll give you the answer. So when I did the first book, 3 Feet from Gold, I invited 300 plus people to go with me to come meet and interview these people, and no one came. Everyone had a bad case of the one size. Everyone had an excuse.
Wait. To interview, to be with who?
Anyone. I mean, the founder of Chick-fil-A, the
creator
of Strength Theory, all these people.
You already have the network? Did you already have Secret Knock then?
No.
No.
This is just my email list, friends, family. Okay. No one who came with me. And afterwards, it became a success. They go, how can I meet your friends? And I says, you know, well, I'll do a little event in my living room. I'll invite a couple that I became friends with, and you can meet them. And so they said, you need a ticket? And I go, nah, just come to the door. I go, bump, bump, bump. And I go, you get in. And that's how it started. And then it grew and grew. And
so people actually came to that?
Yes. 12 people. And from there, it became...
Because you just made it like more nonchalant. It wasn't planned. Here's the night. Here's the thing. Your access code.
It was a thing. Yeah. And then it became a thing and a thing. 19 years later, we were standing room only, sold out months early. It's a phenomenon now. And the way it works is there's no name tags. There's no business cards allowed. Nothing. You have to come as a human being.
Yeah, tell me the...
Here's the idea of Secret Night. We have one rule. It's called
I've never been to one.
It's be cool.
Well, you won't. Am I finally in now? Because yes. I know you.
Didn't I add you to the email list? When we're done, make sure you're on this list. Because I'll give you the thing. You and your wife come.
All right.
And what's really, really cool is that everyone's treated normal. So if water runs out on your table, you don't complain. You get off your ass, you go get water, bring it back to the table. Be normal. If trash is on the floor, throw it away. You're not at your mom's house. And if everyone just is normal, everyone networks and gets to know each other, and you leave with your phone filled with the most amazing people. So I personally hand stock the pond with the greatest people I've met along the quest and give you full access to it. But you'll never know who you're talking to until you talk to them. TTE, talk to everyone. Everyone you know, everyone you meet will know something you don't know.
This is why I started my podcast, because I've always been fascinated with meeting people, interviewing people, finding out what makes them tick. So going back, you said, okay, I found out how you got the name.
By the way, nice size bottle. You guys on like a budget over here? What's going on?
Bro, we got no budget here. No. Hopefully you'll bring some budget to the show. That's why I brought you on. So we can afford bigger bottles of Fiji. All right. So you told me.
You make me look huge.
I know. Look at the size of that hand. People are noticing that. They're not even seeing us. All they see is, wow, look at that. Look how big his hand is compared to that Fiji.
He's huge, like the Jerry Seinfeld guy with the hand. Hey, so, you know.
The man hands.
Yeah. So here's what's interesting about that whole situation. A Secret Knock became Secret Knock because of Seinfeld.
Come on.
Yes, because
you got me.
One episode.
Because I love that show.
One episode was George Costanza opposite day. And so what happened is everyone at that time when I started doing this event would do these flyers with bubble heads of what you're going to learn. And I says, what's the opposite? Well, we won't tell you who will be there. We won't tell you where it's at. So I just did everything George Costanza opposite day.
Yeah.
And that's why it grew.
I live at home. My parents. Exactly. I don't have a job.
So, you're gonna love this last Secret Knock. We had the guy who did all the music for Seinfeld come, and we brought in the soup Nazi.
Stop it. Yeah, actual soup Nazi?
Yeah, it was great.
Come on.
Yeah, this is my jam. Yeah, it was so cool. So we were sitting.
Did he give a couple no soup for you?
Oh, of course he did. It was great. Yeah, it was awesome.
Okay, so.
So Jonathan, the guy who wrote the music, he's all doing up on stage. You're going, how'd you come up with this? Because he did the soundtrack for Married with Children and, you know, Will and Grace and all the different stuff in Seinfeld. And I go, hey, everyone in the audience, I go, who is it that your favorite characters of Seinfeld? And everyone started crossing out. And then everyone kept saying, the soup Nazi. And all of a sudden the spotlight hit him and he's on the third floor and he's like, all dressed, it goes, no soup. And it became this
place went nuts.
Oh, they went nuts.
Nuts.
That's so cool.
Who's your favorite character, by the way, on the whole show? Don't just off the cuff. Mine's easy.
Well, Kramer, I guess.
Yes.
My favorite. Yeah, he's a character. Richard. Yes. Richard's just,
He's for easily my number one guy. I a lot of my physical comedy, the way I overreact, I based it on him.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. So, I know the knock, right? But what is your, why did you start this thing?
I kind of went to that. It's because people kept wanting to meet the people that I was meeting.
Yeah.
And I believe in the power of sharing and giving
and
swapping. So what happens is I said, come meet all my friends. And that's how it was. And then it just kept growing and growing and growing.
When did you realize you had something here? Like, oh, wow.
First time. They left and said, how can we do this again? And then that 12 people.
And there was only 12 people.
And then it went to 50. And so, then from there, it went bigger and bigger and bigger. And now it's so sold out that I don't.
In San Diego, or you do them all over the country?
Vegas. I move them around LA. But the problem is, I don't know how physically I'm going to put everyone in. Where everyone else is having a tough time doing events, I physically am having a challenge right now because we rented out a nightclub here in San Diego, 3-story thing, rooftop deck. I don't know how we're going to put everyone in. So I'm ordering bar stools. And so what I did is I sent an email.
This is the next one coming up.
In 2 weeks. So what I did is I sent an email, Illuminate, and said, hey, everyone, guess what? We're way packed. Here's the bottom line. It's an ebb and flow of industry, of business. Times this place is going to be standing room only. Other times it's going to be empty because they're going to network. Do us a favor. Be cool. If all the seats are run, just grab the floor, grab the stool, share something with somebody else, sit on the counter, do whatever. And everyone set expectations. So when they come, they know exactly what to expect. They get, they're all upset.
Right, which is brilliant.
Yeah. So we're just illuminate. We illuminate. We illuminate.
That's and so you're 19 years in on this.
Yeah, next year is going to be. Next year will be our 20th anniversary, and I'm going to go big. Big. So this year's theme. So the last night, what we do is a soiree, and this party is insane.
Yeah.
So two or three of them ago was Coolio came, did his last concert before he passed away.
Oh, man.
Little River Band. We just brought in this last one, Master G, hip hop, hibby do the hibby to hip hip hop. He did his little thing. And this one coming up, I just secured yesterday our act because we're going to do a Studio 54 disco theme.
Wow.
And I'm bringing in a guy that is going to blow your mind. By the time this comes out, probably won't, it'll be past it. But I'm bringing in the lead singer of Kool & the Gang and all this stuff.
No
He's
going
to do all of his greatest hits. Celebration.
This is for
Ladies
the, this is
Night.
For, this is for the 20th?
No, this is 2 weeks from now.
This is in 2 weeks?
Yeah. Oh, the 20th one?
It's
you're not
stupid.
Prepared for that one.
We're not ready.
You're not ready for that one.
We're not ready.
That's going to be over the top.
So the one in 2 weeks, what's your expected turnout? Like, how many people do you get for these events? How many?
Well, what we do is whatever the facility will hold is what we sell.
Yeah, that's it.
But we oversell it. That's our problem. So that's where we're at.
And
so,
where is this being held? Can we talk about that
San
or no?
San Diego.
Oh, we can't tell that. We can't say the event.
No, I don't know.
I don't know the rules.
Okay, let me be clear.
Give me the rules again.
It costs $5,000 to attend. And I will not tell you where it is. I will not tell you who will be there. Period.
Period. That's
once you pay your tuition, once we know it's a good fit, and the way we do that is someone calls and interviews you. You can't give me money. You have to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And make sure that we say two questions. What is it that you are looking for that we can bring value to you? And what is it that you're going to come to our society and bring value to our people? And if there's a connection, a fit, then we accept you in, and then we drip the secret locations.
So once you're in, then what, you're on the email list or what do you?
Then you're on in text and you're updated and we'll say, hey, here's the secret location. Here's the bit. And by doing that.
And then people bring their friends and.
No,
I mean, not to the event. I'm saying, how did people then get them into the interview process or the application process?
Go to the website, secretknock.co.
Anybody can apply there.
Yeah, you can go apply.
Okay.
Or be invited. So that's it. So a lot of times when you come and you enjoy it, I guarantee you, you're going to tell people the next time, hey, come to this thing. Here's Greg and do a text or introduction. There you go. All right. Enough on Secret Knock.
Why? I want to keep going.
I know, but I feel like it's bragging.
It feel like it's bragging, but this is fantastic because talk about the importance. Let's bring it down to a thing here. Talk about the importance of connecting with people. Like, what is it?
Well, here's the thing.
What you know, it's not what you know, who you know, how much you believe in that.
We all believe that you can do everything, like we said earlier, step by step by step by step by step, and that's only going to get you so far. But it's that one connection you made that changed everything. I'm going to give you an example.
Give me some.
Okay. There's this guy I know, and he owns this retail business, and they sell sleep mattresses. And he's doing really good, and he wanted to expand it and go into a whole different horizon and didn't know how to do it the whole bit. And he realized that he can continue this journey and try to save some nickels aside and eventually save up enough money, or he could have one connection that could open the door to give him that opportunity instantaneously. And that's the way it works.
Instantaneous. And you never know. What do you say? Talk to everybody. What was
it? T-T-E. Talk to everyone. Everyone you meet will know something you don't know. And more importantly, they'll know someone you don't know.
What about the people that are like nervous, apprehensive, not confident enough to talk to people or meet people? For me and you, it's ingrained in us. We love meeting people. We love connecting.
Well,
it's a thing.
I'm a double whammy on that one, to be honest with you. So I'm an introvert, extrovert.
Yeah.
So when I'm on, I'm on. But when I'm home, leave me alone. So I'm two different people type of thing. So
Which is common.
Yeah. So it is both sides of that. And when people come to our event, we do everything possible to make it easy for them. That's why I did this event. So I stocked the pond for you. No matter where you turn around, I promise, no matter where you talk to somebody, you want to talk to them. So that's what's so cool. So that we made it super simple and easy. Plus, we do little networking things where we have people like in church around, talk to somebody and get to know somebody. We want people to network.
I love it.
There's nothing better when people sit there and come back and say, hey, we just started a $100 million business from two people that connected here. It's so cool.
Unbelievable. How important is it, and for people watching, listening, your circle of influence. How important is that? People who you're surrounding yourself with. Talk to me about the importance of that, your viewpoint.
I'm mixed emotions because I used to teach in all my practices that you're a reflection of the five people you hang around, and I don't believe it much anymore. I really don't. Because a lot of people I hang out with are people I not necessarily would do business with, but they're my friends. And so, therefore, it doesn't mean anything. On the same note, I seek counsel and not opinion. So I'm not going to ask the guy, my buddy that I'm playing golf and poker with, about my next business venture. He just cannot understand or relate, so it makes no sense. But I love that guy. So if I'm going to talk about my next business venture, I'm going to say, who's already doing that? And then reach out to that person. I just ask the right thing of the right people.
And then what about the people that have negative people in their life?
That's on them.
That's on them.
So in The Secret of Happiness, I really go deep into this, but I'll give you the short little version. I believe we have to do something called stop. And it's so simple, okay? Imagine I walk into your house and your wife is home. And I got a trash bag and it's full of dirty diapers and rotten cheese. And I open it up and start dumping it in your living room. What is your wife going to say? Stop. What are you doing? Get the hell out of here and take that with you. Yet, for some reason, as adults, we'll sit there, open our brains, and let people dump in it, and we just sit and take it. Not me. So as soon as someone starts doing it, I go, stop. I love you. Appreciate it. I hope you find the help you need. I got to focus over here. I do myself that favor.
I love it. I love it. Okay, favorite book that you've written and why?
I'd rather talk about my favorite book that I've read, because I've only read
We'll go a few there, too. We're going there, too.
So my favorite book that I've written probably is my first.
Or been a part of. Let's say been a part of.
Yeah, well, the first book, because it, you know, The Millionaire Mentor was my first book, and it just...
It's called The Millionaire Mentor.
Yeah, you can go to themillionairementor.com, get a free copy. And it's just, themillionairementor.com.
Why was that your favorite?
Because it was my first, and that's what changed my life.
So, and that was the one where the kid at the school, was that the first one?
Yeah.
Where he said, hey, you should write a book.
Yeah, so that's what I did. And that's where the quote, like I told you about dreams...
That's in there.
That's it. And so that's what started everything. And then from there, it just had this snowball effect.
And give me the premise of the book.
People call me the millionaire mentor because they think I mentor millionaires, but I work with inner city gang kids in San Diego. So I drive up in a Rolls Royce and they'd say, here comes my millionaire mentor. It became a badge of honor. Or the president of the United States wrote a letter of commendation and changed my life and community. So what happened is I wrote a book called The Millionaire Mentor, where it's a story of a mentor takes a kid under his wing and guides him through life. And then the mentee grows to be a fine young adult and then starts teaching other people to do the same.
I love it.
Yeah.
And then the award that you got, what was that for? That was for working with youth, yeah?
Yeah, well, I've got a couple recognitions, but last month I got the Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award.
This was last month.
Yeah. And what's really cool about this one is they're coming to Secret Knock to honor six people at our event as well.
Come on.
Isn't that great?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And then talking about your work with kids or youth.
Well, I'm not doing as much now because I've got my own kid. But back in the day, I was single. I only have a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
So for me to feel that father figure situation is I gave back to the community and I worked with a bunch of kids.
I love it. Yeah. Okay. Keep going with I want to go back to the happiness book because this is a big thing right now. So I think never in history have more people been on antidepressants in our country. I think the alarming statistic recently was it like 40% or so of some of our country is on an antidepressant. Mm. Like these are the percentages. Mm-hmm. What is your thought about where we're at right now and how do we get here? Why is that so high right now?
Okay, so this is going down another little rabbit hole. And again, even though I got a couple honorary degrees, I'm not a doctor. However, I'm telling you what, I'm hanging with the most high-end influential doctors and scientists of modern time, and here's the answer. It has nothing to do with mentality or things of this nature. It has to do with our diet. What's happening is a lot of us have parasites and things of this nature, our gut health is all messed up.
Yes.
And so, therefore, if you change your gut health, then those other symptoms tend to go away.
It's that simple. Gut health. How do we do that? Do you know?
Well, one, you're doing red light therapy.
Yeah.
Two, it's the consumption. Yeah, it's the consumption of the, all these prefab foods, these GMO foods, things of this nature. So it's just making sure I'm not going to give medical advice.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that if you did a little bit of research, it'll blow your mind.
And so all the people that you have in your life, mm-hmm. the scientists, the people that know all the data.
I wish you knew how big that was. It's a huge deal.
Huge.
Huge. Yeah.
Because of gut health.
Gut health.
And especially with let's talk about obesity. 20%, I read this recently, 20% of our children are obese in our country right now.
Yeah, again, though, they're eating what we're eating, a majority of it, and what they're not eating is, again, the prefab stuff. And again, look, all I'm saying is that people, if they stop for a second, just did a little bit of research, less death scrolling, and just did a little bit more Googling, and just ask, hey, how can I improve my gut health, and they work towards that, would see a significant improvement in their life. Overall, skin, health, wellness, vitality, everything.
I love it. And now, talk to me about... name some people, because this is what the, and I'm sorry, I'm going to go there again about Secret Knock. Name some of the people that have been at your events, like big time people. Let's name.
Well, Naveen Jain is a billionaire guy, and he's the biggest advocate of this gut health, by the way. That's
Yeah.
So it's amazing. I've had astronauts, Scott Peresinski, who's one of my favorite guys. This guy he's a medical doctor who's walked in space 7 times and climbed Mount Everest. And checked every single box that you could imagine for mankind. I'd love to be his mom. Imagine going to a party and go, oh, my son just graduated school. Oh, my son's a Harvard graduate. Oh, he's a doctor. Oh, he's been in space. Oh, he's, right? This guy's checked every single box. And I've got to sit down with the people that actually influenced my life in a huge way. For example, Frank Shankiewicz, you know, the founder of Make-A-Wish. Yep. I got to hang out with people that became my very good friends. And the biggest direction I think I've got from Secret Knock at the end of the day is that none of it is nuclear science, even the nuclear science people. Everything's simplified. Mm. I'll give you an example. One guy, his name's Brian, he made $1 billion in dirt. And says, how in the world you make $1 billion with dirt? And he said, time plus land is wealth. Mm. So what do you mean? He says, all I do is I look for a town anywhere in the world that's growing exponentially at 25% a year. I look for Broadway, Main Street, and I draw a line out 8 miles and I buy the dirt. I rent that dirt to farmers. They pay the lease, so it's free, and I get vegetables for years. As the town continues to grow at 25% a year, eventually it ends up on my plot. And since I'm on Broadway, Main Street, and I own the biggest amount of land, I resell it to the big box stores for 800 times what I pay.
Good Lord.
$1 billion.
You had mentioned earlier that you're getting into farming.
Because of this story. That's why I was thinking how to set this story up, because it's impacted my life in such a way that's blowing my mind. So every night I would Google land for sale in San Diego and it would take me out to Valley Center out in the boondocks and nowhere. And one day some land popped up along the coast in Encinitas and Rancho Santa Fe, 3.5 acres against the lagoon, the last undeveloped land. And they listed it super inexpensive because they want to get a bidding war. The next day I went down, there were 70, 80 people walking it. People were putting in offers the whole bit. And I noticed they had a sign that they applied for a permit. So I went and did my investigation. And I realized that there is old barns, windmills, water well from back in the day that were on there. And they wanted to revive and keep it alive. I wrote a cover letter like I was taught as a kid. And I said, dear group, please sell this land to me, and I will do everything in my human power to revitalize and keep your dream alive. And they called me the next day, and they said, you swear that you're not going to subdivide, put condos, and you're going to do this. I said, I promise you, you have my word. They sold it to me for under asking price for next to nothing.
Stop it.
And now I'm redoing it and revitalizing it, and it's all coming to life.
And is this for a farm? What do you...
It was called Herman's Farm. It's very famous. When you go look it up and Google it, it was the largest cattle ranch and lima bee farm on the West Coast. And so
this is in Rancho Santa Fe.
Yeah. So a living hay was created by the family who did this. And so this was their thing. And Herman was the main guy. He lived 103. And this was Herman's Farm. And so I'm revitalizing it now. And I got to tell you, there's nothing quite like it. Look, again.
Are you doing? Is it farmland? Are you going to be farming? What are you?
Yes. I'm going to do everything I humanly can do. It's I'm going through all the permits right now. Yeah. So as soon as it goes through, we can have a deeper conversation. But it looks like it's all going to come through this year, and then we can start building and doing it. Yeah.
In your business career, what's the most difficult, hardest situation you've ever been in that you went through that you basically built your stamina, your fortitude, that your fortitude's never been tested more. Give me something in business, something you've gone through.
Every major thing I do tests me that way. So this situation I'm doing right now, look, I've done, you know, $1 million deals, but I've never done this type of I've never done something this big. So that's testing me because it's new numbers. I'm not used to it. When I've done, made a movie, major motion picture, that was different. Same thing, always pushing. But the two setbacks I've had, I've only had two. It's like interesting. Mm. And again, you know, those 10 things and you always focus on the two.
Right.
Those are still on my shoulder as well. So one,
they're still in there.
They're still in there because I have such a high success rate, but I have two that didn't go good. One, I started a clothing line and I thought for sure I was going to be a billionaire. I got it on MTV, the back in the day when they did MTV Awards.
Yeah.
The head guy wore all my outfits, all the celebrities on stage. It was in every major magazine, but they just didn't sell. So it just didn't work.
You had it out there.
Oh, I did everything right.
What was it? Can you tell us the...
It was just a clothing line, men's wear. It was great. It was very unique.
There was no saying or anything? It was just...
No, it was a very classic, great outfit. But the bottom line, it didn't work. And I lost my tail. And then the second one was the furniture store. Again, and I did all my homework. I bought it from a good friend of mine.
Who was your friend? Because I knew about you then.
So back in the day, right?
Can you say the first name?
Robert.
Robert.
Yeah, so I had this furniture. He had this furniture store. I bought it from him. It was already successful. I did all the due diligence. I brought in accountants. I did everything to make sure it was all good. I went all in. I second mortgaged my house. I put all my cash in to buy this thing. And then the next month was the housing crash. And so things happen. And again, I wasn't angry at myself. I was just bummed that that happened.
Yeah.
But when you take a hit like that, it kind of sticks with you for a little bit.
Was this the one right in front of Jerome's?
Yes.
I knew that guy.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing about you.
There you go.
This is so funny. Yeah. And so, and again, I'll go back. We were the first furniture and mattress store to advertise on Craigslist. Hmm. We were the first. So we, 2008, 2009, we like quadrupled our sales.
Yeah, you crushed it.
Destroyed.
I tried everything. I mean, it's so funny because I've realized.
Because you're right in front of Jerome's. You'd think you'd have a good lead generation.
Oh, it did. It was going well for 12 years. But the housing crash, no one's buying furniture for a thing when they're going, losing their house.
Yeah,
no one's refurnishing their house.
So even though that was absolutely of no fault of yours.
Bloodbath. It was a crime scene, man. I'm telling you.
But even though that wasn't your, you're not beating yourself up over it, right? Or is it something there?
Yeah, don't beat yourself up, but it still sits on your back of your shoulder.
But even though it wasn't your fault.
I know, but it's all I'm saying is that still to this day, it's still there. Look, I've done so many insanely successful things since then. So what I'm saying though,
it's one furniture store.
Yeah. Tony Robbins talks about this thing called mastery.
Yeah.
And so I feel like starting another furniture store just to have it successful so I could sell it.
Hey, I got a mattress store you can invest in.
There you go.
Just to get the monkey off the back.
Just get the monkey off the back.
See, I can do it. Build it up for a year. See, it's successful. And then that's off the brain.
There you go.
All right, so we're going to land the plane soon because I got you till what? What we got till 9:30?
Yep.
About now. Okay, so I want to leave everybody. So in your 20s, you're at probably 25, 30, 30 plus years at this point, entrepreneurship. What do we leave people listening, watching right now? Because the majority of people are getting all caught up in the hype and the negativity of the country and blah, 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 this, blah, 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 this. What can you tell people? Leave them on a note of it, all the books that you've written or been a part of as far as the secret. You know, we already went through what the secret of happiness, like being happy is, your definition. Give them something, some action steps and what you would tell them to do from this point forward.
All right. The biggest one is called CPC. CPC is an acronym that stands for Clues, Patterns, Choices. It's about accountability and responsibility. Every single thing that happens to us is our fault. Stop blaming other people.
I like that.
So CPC works like this. I'm a single guy. I go out on a first date. She happens to be 20 minutes late. Anything could have happened, right? Babysitter, traffic. But that's the first C. It's called a clue. Now, I like her, so I keep dating her. And every time I pick her up, she's 20 minutes late. That forms a P, which is called a pattern. Now, it's my other C, my choice, whether I deal with it, I yell at her, I tell her a different time, break it. But it's not her fault. She's just late. We have to stop trying to change people to fit into our own paradigm box. No one wants to be changed. But we'll see someone with
Repeat that for the people in the back.
Stop trying to change people because no one wants to be changed. But we'll see someone with a bad reputation in business. They cheat your best friend. You do business thinking it'll be different for me. When things go wrong, you're mad at the person. You saw the clues, you saw the pattern, you made the choice. It'd be like seeing a rattlesnake rattle, bite your kid's sister, you pet the snake, get bit, and you're mad at the snake. Looking back in life, rarely will we be angry at relationships that failed or negotiations that fell through. We're mad at ourselves because we saw the clues, we saw the patterns, but we made our choices late.
How important is it to go with your gut in a situation when you think that there's a red flag, there's a clue? How important is it to go with your gut when you know something isn't right? But most people can't do that. It's so hard.
Yeah. It goes down to that gut health.
Gut health. It's a thing.
That gut health.
Like, I listen to my gut. That's an actual gut physiological gut thing. Health.
Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting.
Yeah. It all keeps going down to that. You start working on your gut health and your other health will follow. That's all it comes down to.
Gut, ladies and gentlemen, this whole interview is worth that right there. Take care of your gut health and all else will follow.
That's right.
And how important is mindset when it comes to becoming successful? Mindset. Well,
PMA, positive mental attitude, is key to, you know, every single thing we can do in life. Look, as long as we can look at what's possible and we see the blueprint that we can get ourselves to that spot, everything's amazing as soon as we align ourselves with people that will encourage us.
Mm.
Unfortunately, most people will take feedback from people that just give you opinion and not people that give you counsel. So if we could sit there and say, hey, I'm going to start a new clothing line, understand this, association and collaboration, here's how you can come into play. You got a kick-ass logo. A buddy of yours has a print press that he has in the garage for Little League. Another guy makes websites. Join together.
Yeah.
Zero out of pocket, and you got a new clothing business. Most people don't see those collaborative opportunities that are right in front of your eyes. During COVID, we realized that, you know, in a parking lot, there'd be a liquor store in the corner and a pizza parlor. Each one of them would fight and actually have these arguments who's going to take the parking spaces. Rather than come together and say, hey, every time someone comes and orders a keg, give them a discount for three of my pizzas.
Yeah.
And every time someone comes and orders a big bunch of pizzas, we'll give them a discount for a six-pack of beer. You start living this collaborative lifestyle.
Yes.
It's amazing what's possible.
All right. So we're going to finish on this. Your quote, hit him with your quote, the one that became shared 37 million times last year alone, right? Mm-hmm. Did I get the number right? Mm-hmm. Finish with that quote and explain that quote.
It's interesting. Ice-T just did a podcast and did all of my quote.
Did he really?
Yeah. It was amazing.
The whole thing was on the quote.
Correct. It says, a dream written down with a date becomes a goal. A goal broken down into steps becomes a plan. And a plan backed by action makes your dreams come true. When Bob and I were doing Thoughts or Things, we realized, again, how many times have we had a $1 million idea in the shower? By the time we brush our teeth, it's down the drain to see it on a billboard 10 years later. The only difference between you and that one person is one person acted.
One person acted. There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Reed. I can't tell you how much it's been an honor, been a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing us some of your very valuable time with us, Mr. Greg Reed. We appreciate you, brother.
We're good.
So glad we finally met. So glad we finally connected. Looking forward to connecting further. Looking forward to finally being on the guest list of The Secret Knock.
Shh.
And ladies and gentlemen, Greg Reed, my man. Outstanding. Love you. That's a wrap. Real deal talk. You got to growl.
All right, thanks for having me.
Work on that. We'll work on that. Love you, man.